Accession number 7396, room number 1.
Colonel Hancock, Reel 1. Could you tell me something about your background before the war, Colonel Hancock?
Well, the summer term of 1914 was my last term at school. And it was... war was in the air. People realised that there was... the German Navy had been preparing for a long time. Lord Roberts, at that time, had been trying to get people to see the danger. But you know, people were very casual about it. They didn't really believe him. But it happened. Anyway, at the end of the summer term, there I was at age 17, and within a few days of my leaving school, the war broke out. At that time, my family and I and my aunt were down in Newquay in Cornwall. We started our summer holiday, we always went down to Newquay. And that was where we actually heard the news. Well, it didn't do our holiday much good. We somehow realised at last it had come, although it had been in our minds for a long time, but now it was it. And I think I'm right in saying that we came back earlier than we would have done otherwise. Oh, that's rather beside the point. Well, then I had ideas then of going to the university. Well, with that coming, war coming, completely put a stop to that, which was a pity. It's a thing, a university is a thing you never get back. It only happens once in your life. If you miss it, it's gone. However, that was that. But my father's business came to a stop, and even for financial reasons, I could not come there. That was it. So I began to look around to see what I could do. At the age of 17, I couldn't get into the army until I was 18. So I thought, well, the only thing I can do is to go to schoolmaster, if you please. Anyway, I went and to one of the scholastic agencies, and they put me in touch with a number of schools who wanted an assistant master, and eventually I was engaged by the King's School at Gloucester. Now, that was a hell of a cheek on my part to take on a job like that, and I didn't really realise until I got there. God, I mean, damn it, the boys were only a couple of 3 years younger than I was. Anyway, that was that. But it was kept by the Reverend Oswald Hayden, who was a good athlete and a very nice chap. But he was a curious character, and in later on, I know he had some question of whether he was a fit person to be a canon of Gloucester Cathedral. Well, that didn't come until after, so I didn't know it at the time. King's School used to provide the choir for Gloucester Cathedral. And that, to me, was very, very interesting. I had my own seat in the choir stalls. And we went to the cathedral twice every Sunday, and a good many others occasion too. And that was very pleasant. I got through the teaching fairly well. I was fresh from school, and I had it all in my mind, although I wasn't not a very bright scholar, I may say. However, we got on right. And that was it. I can't remember exactly what we were paid, but a matter of a few pounds a term, I seem to remember. And I think at the end of the term, I got a cheque for about 30 quid, and somebody told me where to cash it in Gloucester, so I thought I was doing all right. Anyway, that was the first term, and I went back in for the Christmas holidays. Well, I was very unhappy as a civilian. Everybody, I mean, the country was at war. And there was a most terrific surge of patriotism. It was absolutely amazing how everybody wanted to do something. I think a bit precipitate sometimes, but I felt very, very conspicuous as a civilian. I didn't like it a bit. But I got another term to come, and I had to stick it out. And at that time, too, I seem to remember a lot of conscientious objectors. Well, the patriotism and conscientious objectors don't go together very well. And I know that a lot of those people, the genuine ones, had a rotten time. I think they were suspected as being cowardly and that sort of thing. I think they were very brave people to stick it out, because they had really sound, conscientious reasons for not joining some organization which was going to kill something or somebody. And they were put to very searching tests. And I felt very, very sorry for them. I didn't realize it fully until later on. But they were brave men. The genuine ones. There were plenty of the others as well. However, that was it. Well,
were you ever in any way approached or rebuked as a civilian for not having joined up? People who didn't realise you were only 17? Any white feather incidents or anything?
I can't remember it. I don't remember it. There was an awful lot of this white feather business going on, which, of course, was, in many cases, very unfair. And people who were doing far more valuable job than being an individual in the army, doing far more, were in civilian clothes, and they were looked upon rather as camps, which again was very unfair to them. And that was where white feathers were handed out to people who looked as if they ought to be in the army. Well, I think it'll always happen. I suppose it will. But the reason for that was, as I say, the terrific surge of patriotism and doing something for one's country and you being, you know, defending the land and all that sort of thing. So, it was a very touchy time, if you understand what I mean. Anyway, to go back to the INFL, the second term came, much the same thing went on, nothing particular. I began to feel that I was getting somewhere, because I had applied for a commission, and I was told that I might possibly have a commission when I was 18, which happened to be on the middle of April, 15th of April. Well, eventually my commission did come along. I had been recommended by my headmaster and by the captain of my school OTC. I'd been in the shooting eight and that sort of thing, and I was accepted by the Northamptonshire Regiment for a commission, which I received, in fact, 2 days after I was 18.
Could I just ask you about the OTC side? Could you tell me a little about your OTC training before
That was... I had been in the OTC at school for, I suppose, 2 or 3 years. We were reasonably smart. We were certainly very keen. We had a drill sergeant who taught us a very good drill and very good discipline. It was a captain, 2 lieutenants, and there were 4 sections to our company. I think we had about 120 of us, I suppose, in the team. We had our own bugle band, and altogether we were quite proud of it. And in the summer, at the end of the summer term, we were asked if any of us liked to go to camp. Well, it was a rather hard decision to make, because it meant you've got to give up perhaps the first 10 days of your holidays, which is no schoolboy likes to do, as far as I know. Anyway, I went twice, And the last time I went, which was in the summer term of 1914, we went down to Mitchett Camp, not far from Aldershot. And we were down there, I suppose, 10 days or a fortnight. And one of the things I remember was seeing Colonel Cody with his biplane. It was in the very early days of flying, and he's a wonderfully brave man.
Could you describe him a little and his biplane?
Well, I can only remember he was a rather thick-set, shortish figure, I seem to remember him. It was a biplane. It was by the canal, I remember, but well, I never saw him flying in it. I think they had to spend so much time repairing it or altering it or doing something. It was a hell of a thing to get off the ground in those days, really. And if you saw an airplane flying in the sky, it was a thing that you talked about for some time. Anyway, that was the camp there.
And so what sort of things did you do during the camp?
Well, we did tactical exercises against imaginary enemies, which, like so much of the training then, was, I don't say almost imaginary in itself. We learned a fair amount. We learnt to march fair distances, which we in the ordinary course of events we didn't do. We learnt to live on army rations, which were cooked for us by the fatigue parties from the Guards Brigade from Pobart. And they were a tough lot of chaps. Their one idea, incidentally, after in the evening, after things were over, was to get some of us to go down the pub with them and buy their drinks for them.
they
thought that was wild. Of course, we thought we were terrific chaps, as we came down with a regular soldier in a scarlet uniform. My God, we were quite big fellows then. And they made the best of it. And
did you have much rifle training?
Not an awful lot. We got a certain amount of shooting at school. Well, I was in the, as I said, I was in the shooting aid in school, which I enjoyed very much, and we were quite successful there. There were one or two things, if it's of any interest, I could tell you about that. We went to Bisley on one occasion, to shoot for the Ashburton Shield. Now, that is for the schools in England, and usually about 50 schools went in for it. And we were under canvas there. It was a very nice summer. And we were under canvas. And another, one of the other eight, George Carter and I, went out and walked around the camp, and we bought a lot of cherries. And we thought they looked damn good. Went back to them. Of course, we'd finished these off, you see. We ate far too many. Well, next morning, not so hot. We were in pretty poor shape. And on the trot all the time, Andy looked as if we weren't going to be able to be fit to take part in the shoot. Well, our captain, Captain Mules, who was our OTC captain, he said, "Now, there's only one thing for it. You come with me." So George and I went off to the refreshment tent with him. This was, I suppose, about 11 o'clock in the morning, I suppose, and we were due to shoot fairly soon. And he said, "Now, this is kill or cure." And he gave us a port and brandy each. Well, age of 17, scarcely. Port and brandy in the morning. Anyway, we had it. And my God, it did the trick. It's a well-known cure for that kind of thing. And we completely recovered. We went back and we got down to shoot. He and I were the last pair to go down. We used to go down in pairs and shooting. He was the last pair to go down. And not only did we shoot pretty well, but we each got I got top score and he was second. I must say, I thought it was very brave of that master to take us and chance everything, which he did. It's a very vivid memory of that.
Good story. How did your parents react when you joined up in 1915?
Well, I think they realised that my feelings about it. And they realised that although I was only just eligible to go into the army, they couldn't very well stand in my way. And because I didn't realise that at the time, I had no idea at that time how selfish I was being, really, thinking of myself and getting to do what I wanted to do and try and imagine myself a bit of a hero to do this, that and the other, not realising what they must be feeling about it. And I didn't realise that for a long time. Any idea that they should not want me to go into there, I couldn't quite understand. I could only see it from my point of view, but it really was a bit selfish, no doubt about it. But to their eternal credit, they never tried to stop me in any way at all. And they said, well, you feel like that, that's all right, you go and do it. But I admire them very, very much for that.
Could you tell me what happened when you joined the Northamptonshire Regiment?
Yes. Well, first of all, I had to get fitted out with my uniform and equipment, for which the government allowance was very inadequate. However, I got what was necessary, and I went off by train to Norwich, and I joined them there. Now, it was the 1st 4th Battalion of the Northamptonshire Regiment, and they had been mustered at Bury St Edmunds some months beforehand. They had then moved to Norwich, and that's where I joined them. But I know, again, I have a very vivid remembrance of the first evening and the next morning. We were in billets. I was met by the station at the station by one of the other officers, who in fact was a school friend, had been at school with me, and he took me up to the billets, and it was late-ish, I think, by the time I got there, and one of them said, the three of us in this room, both of the others had been at the same school as I had, and I felt not too bad about that. They said, tomorrow we've got a march past. We're being inspected by somebody, goodness knows who. But he said, all you've got to do, you march in front of your platoon, and when you get to the saluting base, you say, eyes right, and you salute, and that's all there is to it. That sounds all right. I think I might be able to manage that. But I'd never marched past anywhere before. At least I don't think I had before. And I'd never seen my platoon. Those excellent chaps, I'm quite sure they were all budding heroes, but I'd never seen them. Anyway, we got on parade and we did this march past. I haven't very vivid memories of that, but I realised afterwards that I might just about have got through, because I didn't get a hell of a rocket as I expected to get. So that was all right. But the way one was pitching at the deep end was something to remember in those days.
Just a point you raised earlier, you said you bought various items of kit as a young officer in 1915. Can you still remember what sort of things a young officer would need then? Or was told he'd need?
He might. Well, he had to buy his uniform, he had to buy a Sam Brown, he had to buy a cap, forage cap, boots, One thing I remember buying were this pair of boots that I bought in Watford at a little shop, and I paid 18 and sixpence for them. And I wore those for about 4 years. It was the best pair of boots I've ever had in my life. Anyway, those were just the rough, the essentials one bought. You bought afterwards, you bought a nap case or a holster for your pistol or a revolver. Those sort of things came out of it. But the money we were given for that never used to cover those sort of things. But
can we talk a little bit about the your training routine now? When did training commence, and what was the nature of it?
Well, first thing in the morning always was PT, which is a darn good thing for everybody. And we got on the parade ground in PT kit, and we were put through it by the drill instructor. And it did us a world of good, no doubt about it. And we really got to get fit. We did a certain amount of marching, route marching, with equipment and packs and so on. I and some of the recently joined officers did special drill on the parade ground by the sergeant major, and we were taught how to deal with our platoon and to get to know them and to get to understand them and get to give orders, which of course we'd never done. You see, the only training I'd had was in the OTC at school, which is a very different cup of tea. And here you were in the army, which is a very different matter. But that went on. I can't remember any particular incident there until we packed up there and went to St. Albans. And that was where our training became a bit more searching. We went, we did a great deal of route marching then.
Can you describe a typical route march, route march?
Well, we were in column of fours. We used to start off, we fell in at a certain point, which we were warned before and where it would be the night before. We fell in there in order of, there were four companies to the battalion, A, B, C, and D. So that number one platoon, there were four platoons in each company. So one platoon, three, four, were in that order, and that's the order in which we marched off in column of fours. I don't remember the regimental band accompanying us. It may have done, but I don't remember that. Anyway, the point was to get us fit and to get us used to carrying packs and that kind of thing. And
is there any singing?
Yes. We used to sing the old sort of pack up your troubles in your old kit bag and the long way to Tipperary. Those sort of songs, which one still remembers. And it was quite a cheerful sort of aspect of our training, really. And we used to march for 50 minutes in every hour. If we left at 11 in the morning, we fell out, had a halt at 10 minutes to 12. 10 minutes, and then start off again. Get fell in, as the was the thing. And we started off with marches of about 10 or 12 miles, and gradually increased. We got up to 20 miles, that kind of thing, which is as much as I wanted, anyway. And it got us together into it gave us some character as a battalion, as a fighting machine. We began to realise that we were doing things. and various forms of tactical exercises we had with other troops, perhaps.
Could you describe these?
Well, of course, here again, looking back on it, of course, there's no doubt that an awful lot of our training was based on the Boer War. Well, the Boer War was, a matter of about 12 or 14 years before that, I suppose, 1914, yeah. And that was the latest form of military exercise. And if we attacked the imaginary enemy, thank God they were imaginary, mind you, the imaginary enemy would be lining that bank, 100 yards away, time, whatever. There wasn't much cover, perhaps. So you advanced in extended order, otherwise there were a yard or two between each man, and you advanced across an open country. You went in short rushes, it was called, and you gave the command to rush, I think was the word, and then down, everybody lay down, so that you didn't get shot, I suppose. In the meantime, you were full view of the enemy. You probably had about two of these rushes. In the last 50 yards, you charged, and everybody shouted, "Hooray!" Whether that was supposed to frighten the enemy to death, I don't know, but it must have been absolutely suicidal. And that was the sort of basis on which we were supposed to attack a place. Of course, it was quite impossible to have for us to have survived